Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck, buddies? What the fucking ears? Happy New Year. Happy New Decade. Is that too optimistic? We're in it. Here we go again. We made it another year. Are things getting better? Some things are definitely not getting better. Other things may be. I personally am in my sixth decade of life on planet Earth, 56 years old. And I don't think I really took into consideration what this transition means. For me, New Year's is kind of I don't do much on New Year's. I don't go to parties. I don't work on New Year's. I used to. Sometimes I used to go out and do the early spot and get out, in and out, maybe go out to dinner. But the last few New Year's, I keep a low profile, watch a movie, take it in. The changing of the year with the someone close to me, and that's usually been the thing. I don't think I really thought about the fact that we're entering another decade, that it's been a decade, and that there were some markers this decade. I mean, this decade was a big decade for me. This was the decade, really, for me. This might be the pinnacle, this last decade, of the Marc Maron experience, of the Marc Maron trajectory. We might be arcing downward now. So it was a big decade, but I'll talk about that in a minute. Let's get some stuff out of the way. Today on the show, Scott Kahn is an actor. He's the son of James Kahn. He's on Hawaii Five-0. That's currently in its 10th season. It's on Friday nights on CBS. I ran into him at Mogador in New York City, and I introduced myself. He knew who I was. I've liked his work in the Oceans movie. He's always very funny with Casey Affleck. I've watched very little Hawaii Five-0. I always like James Caan, tough Jew. You'll feel the presence of me poking around in Scott Caan's brain and life for tidbits about his old man. But, he also lived, Scott was no slouch. He's been there and back, and it was nice to talk to him, even though I did probably get a little annoying. I tend to do that with the sons or daughters of the people who do the things. It's hard to avoid it, but usually I'm respectful. But I think we got a little something. Anyway, Scott Kahn is here. My tour dates, if I could, the freezing portion, the freezing leg of the Hey, There's More tour begins Thursday, January 30th in Cleveland, Ohio at the Agora Theater. And then we go to January 31st in Grand Rapids, Michigan at the Fountain Street Church. Saturday, February 1st in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the Turner Hall Ballroom. Friday, February 14th, take a break from the freezing, go down to Orlando, Florida at the Hard Rock Live, and then on to Tampa on Saturday, the 15th of February at the Straz Center. Thursday, February 20th, back up to freezing Portland, Maine State Theater. Friday, February 21st, Providence, Rhode Island at the Columbus Theater. Saturday, February 22nd, New Haven, Connecticut at College Street Music Hall. And Sunday, February 23rd, Huntington, New York at the Paramount. Go to WTFpod.com/tour for links to all the venues. Can you dig it? All those dates I will be doing with Dean Del Rey. Dean Del Rey and me. So, the 10-year marker, the decade marker, the new decade business. It was 10 years in September since the beginning of this podcast, since when I started back in 2009 at the old house in the old garage. And that's a big deal. The arc of this decade has been a very impactful and life-changing period of time for me. I'm now in a new house, in a new situation. I'm about to move into the garage of this house. It's a nicer garage, obviously, and it's all redone. And it just, I guess everything goes on. Things are certainly different, but I tried to take a look back with a little bit of gratitude over the last couple of days as we begin this new year, with some trepidation, some fear, some hope, also some weariness, some the idea of like, you know, like, when can I just ease out? But look, I just hope that you took a bit of time to express, at least to yourself, some gratitude for what you do have and what has gone well, and maybe how you can do things differently. As I've said before, it's difficult to live in a world where you know, maybe things are going well for you personally, but things outside of you seem to be spiraling out of control. And I guess it's just we have to find a balance and figure out what we can do to help out. But I reconnected with somebody. If you've been with me on this show since the beginning, I had a roommate at my old house. Her name was Stosh. Anastasia Stosh Kusaki. She used to live with me over at the old house when I started the podcast. She was around, man. And she was there when I got in the bathtub with my jeans. She was there when we were just starting out trying to figure out how to make money, packing envelopes with me, sending swag out to people that donated. It was before GoFundMes and before the, what is it called, Patreon. We just like set up a website. You know, if you like the show, send some money. I'll send you a t-shirt and some stickers. Hundreds of fucking envelopes. She was there at the beginning. She lived with me. And the reason I reached out to her is I wanted to tell her that LaFonda had passed because she had a relationship with the cat. You know, the cat used to sleep with her, and she loved that cat. And that's how we reconnected. And we had she came over. I showed her the house, and she, you know, we talked about how our lives had changed. It's been almost a decade. It was very nice because she was there at the beginning. She's doing fine, and I'm doing fine. And it just is. There wasn't tension. It was one of those situations where I think I met with her a couple of times to apologize for the same thing, which wasn't anything. I just felt that, you know, when she moved out, it was weird. But everything's okay, man. She's got a baby. You know, things change, and it was great to see her. It all happened because I reached out of respect for her relationship with my fucking cat, with my past cat, LaFonda. And now I got to deal with Monkey, man. Monkey seems a little out of sorts. I don't know if that's, you know, maybe, I guess they grieve. Why wouldn't they? But like I sit down, he climbs up to me. He's literally like a baby. He'll climb onto my chest and just tuck into my shoulder every time. And he's sleeping a lot. I think he's sad. It took a week or two to, you know, for him to, I guess, register that his sister was gone. But maybe that's it. Is that it? I don't know. Look, Scott Kahn is here, and he's on Hawaii Five-0. That show must have a lot of fans. It's been on a long time. It's the 10th season. It's on Friday nights on CBS. We talk about a lot of stuff, and it was nice to meet him. And here we are, me and Scott, talk.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort, auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowerte-Dienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowerte-Dienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Have you done any voiceover work where you've had to wear the cans and talk into a mic, Scott?
I've auditioned for things that they didn't hire me for, but so yeah.
No cartoon voices for you?
No, I like it. Sounds like a good gig.
Yeah, pull that thing in. So like, you know, you can pull
it right up in my mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I got a 13-year-old dog that's been my best friend, and she's got this thing called degenerative myelopathy.
What is that?
It's basically the spinal disease where her back legs shut down and they stop working. But I'm not gonna do too much, you know. When she, you know, I live in a, I got a lot of steps.
Yeah.
So she can't really make it up and down the steps now. So when she can't get up, I'm going to end it because, you know, her whole thing, I'm already leaving her. Yeah. I usually take her with me everywhere.
Right.
Now I'm already leaving her at her home and she looks at me like, you know what? Yeah. I go with you. So.
Yeah. What do you mean you got a lot of steps? You live in New York?
No. I live in Laurel Canyon. I mean, oh, yeah. I'm not on a fifth floor walk up, but right. Yeah, there's like, you know, 40 something steps to get up there.
Oh man. So do you have a plan?
I'm just going to not push it further than it needs to be pushed, you know?
But you're going to put her down?
Yeah.
They got people that come over and do it, man.
Yeah. I mean, I'll do it, you know, like I'll sit there with her and do it, but you
have someone come over.
Yeah. Have someone.
You're not going to take her to the vet.
No. Have someone come over.
Have you had to deal with this before?
I mean, like I was telling you before we started. I'm kind of okay with death.
What does that mean? Are you really, or you just think you are?
A combination of both. I think part of me, there's like a party that can be cold to it because you've experienced a lot of it, and then there's another part of it that's like, you know, we're all eventually going to wrestle with God at some point, and we never win that one,
right?
You know, so. It's you know, life's a tragedy, right? We're all gonna die. There's
it doesn't end well for anybody.
No. So if you wrote this in a movie, you know, like this is the story, and then you die at the end.
Yeah,
it's always tragic.
The one thing we know for sure.
Yeah, and if it were me, you know, I know what I like to do, and if I get to a point, you know, we're all gonna be at that place, and we either get to be courageous or not. We either get to go, all right, there's more for me to do that I look forward to,
right?
And if not. Let's be done and see what's next. Or if there's nothing next, then let's be done.
So I get it. I mean, I try to reconcile that shit. I mean, I'm 56 and I think about it more than I used to. I'm trying to be okay with it because it's on some level, it's the one thing we all know for sure that we're going to die. So on a practical level, it should be the one thing that we're all relatively comfortable with, but it's actually the one thing we're all terrified of more than anything.
Sure, of course. And by the way, I'm not trying to be a tough guy. I'm scared of, I don't want to die.
Yeah,
I like
right.
my life.
Right.
It's funny, when I was younger, I was reckless because I didn't care.
Yeah.
And I didn't care about what would happen to me. But now that I really like life,
right.
Of course, now I'm like, well, wait a minute. Now I dig it. And I want this to go on for a long time now.
Things have turned around.
But, I feel like if I get to a point where I can't do the things that I like to do, or like with my dog, I can see that she doesn't want, she's not happy, so she's not herself anymore, then I'm going to go, what are we doing anymore?
So you're going to have someone put you down? Is that?
No, but I'm not going to, you know, I don't know what it is. I don't know what I'm going to do. I still got a minute, man. I'm, you know.
I just want it to happen quick.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's like, another thing. Look, I don't want to do 8 years of slowly losing my brain and getting goofy. Ooh. I hope, you know, I'd like to go to the gym at 92 in the morning and get hit by a bus later in the afternoon.
Fine.
That's perfect.
Yeah. 92. That's the
right?
age. Yeah, it's good.
I'll take it, you know.
How are your genes? You good?
I think I'm pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, now, are you friends with your dad?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
It's because, like, it must be an odd thing because he's like one of these kind of like stocky alpha Jews from the 70s.
One of the three, I guess, right? All right.
In acting world or in the world in general?
It's funny. I only knew tough Jews growing up.
There's plenty of tough Jews.
Yeah.
So what, you mean like your family?
My family and, you know, people that I knew and people I knew growing up.
Yeah.
But yes, in the acting world, there's like him and who else?
The tough Jews?
Yeah.
Well, now you got Bernthal.
John Bernthal.
Yeah.
He's a... half Jew or full Jew?
I think he might be full Jew. I can't remember. I talked to him.
Genuine tough kid.
Yeah, for sure.
Genuine tough kid.
Yeah. Shia LaBeouf.
He's a Jew
too. He's
half
a Jew. He's a half a Jew.
Genuine tough kid.
He is. Yeah.
I mean, by the way, I know John.
Yeah.
And I actually used to box. He boxed, and I boxed with some people that he boxed.
Yeah.
And so I've heard stories about him being genuinely tough.
Yeah.
And I don't know Shia, but I've heard stories that he's a tough kid.
It seems like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not. Yeah. I think I'm more of an alpha pussy, really.
I don't know.
I'm not that tough.
No.
But I mean, so you grew up in Hollywood.
I did.
And like the whole time, like, but how did it work out? Like, what? How many? Siblings, how many kids does your dad have? Like, how did that all break down?
He's got a lot of them, a lot of different wives.
I
got a sister that I met when I was 12.
That you met when you were 12?
Uh-huh.
How the fuck does that happen? Did you not know about her?
I knew about her, but it was just something we didn't really talk about. I walked into the house. I was 12 years old.
That was the first wife?
Yes, his first wife. Well, there's also one that's suspect that I think was annulled quickly, so I don't know if they count that one, but that might have been before that or after. I don't know. Anyway.
Right.
Yeah, I walked into the house. I was 12 years old, and she my dad said, hey, this is your sister, meet your sister. And she looked at me, and the first thing she did was she said, he's stoned.
And to that's you?
Yeah. I was 12. And
and were you?
I was, yeah, yeah.
Really?
Super zooted, yeah.
And did you? Did that get you in trouble?
He looked at me and, you know, he said, have you been smoking weed? And I said, no, I swear to God. But, you know, and then that was my, that's how our relationship started with my sister. And then she picked me up from school the next day and brought her, ate the weed and dropped it on my lap and asked me if I knew how to roll a joint. I said, yeah.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
So you're the middle, so then.
Is that bad to say?
So you're second. You're the second wife.
I'm not the wife. I'm the son of the second wife.
Second wife,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then he's got another one.
Another three.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I got a 28-year-old brother. I got a 23-year-old brother, and I got a 20-year-old brother. And the 20 and the 23 are from the same wife. So he's stuck with that one.
Uh huh. How old is he?
He'll be 80 next year.
And is he working?
He's actually right now, he's obsessed with fixing himself. You know, he's been a maniac most of his life.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
He rodeoed, he raced boats, he rode motorcycles,
right.
He did everything you're not supposed to do to your body.
Uh-huh.
And so he's just done another back surgery, but a pretty heavy one.
Yeah.
So he's recovering from that, but it's a slow, tough one. So he's kind of working through
that. Do you go over there?
Yeah, man.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Now, so when you're growing up, like who, like what's the scene? I mean, because like I've talked to a couple of Hollywood, you know, people that, you know,
I'm the Hollywood people category.
Well, it's okay, you grew up here. It's not a matter of Hollywood people. Like I've talked to people whose parents were in the business and they're in the business, like
right.
You know, Ed Begley Jr. Like, you know, for example, that you know, it's just a very specific. It's not a judgment thing. It's a specific type of lifestyle.
Right.
And you know, throughout the duration of this show, you know, if there's anything that starts to reveal itself is that, you know, this is a community like any other community of working people. They just happen to be movie stars.
Sure.
And completely, some of them are out of their minds and spend too much money.
Right.
But like growing up, like what was the house like? Who were the people that were around? Who were your peers in that world?
I mean,
or your dad's?
I mean, he was kind of the anti-Hollywood dude, you know what
yeah?
I mean? He sort of didn't speak highly of that world.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he said, if you ever turn out to be one of these Hollywood kids, I'm going to, you know, give you a beat. And I got that talk every day. So
really?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And who was he? Like who? What was the example?
I mean, I don't know. Was no example.
Just spoiled Hollywood brat?
Don't be a brat or I'll kill you, basically.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
My dad's, you know, he's played tough guys, but he's genuinely a tough guy.
He is.
You know, one of the toughest guys I've ever met.
I just remember reading that his father was a butcher.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, this guy was, my grandfather's hands were like, one finger was like two of your thumbs. You know?
Did you know the guy?
Yeah, I knew him.
Oh, yeah.
He passed when I was, I think, 7 or 8 years
yeah.
old. But I mean, he would, you know, he could lift people out of cars at 70 years old. He could bend quarters with his hands.
Come on.
I'm not kidding. He ripped phone books in half. I mean, he was like, weirdly strong and
these
scary.
Are things he'd show you he could do?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But so, anyway, about
entertaining
the Hollywood thing,
yeah.
You know, he, anything but this business and anything but being like one of these Hollywood people was sort of his trip.
So is he mad at you now?
No, because I think he respects what I do a little bit.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's, I mean, I don't want to say proud, but I think he, you know, he...
It's so weird to hear, though, isn't it? Because, like, he was, like, you know, he was doing it a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he was in Westerns. What was he in that movie with Dean Martin? I mean, Christ, he was, like...
Yeah, El Dorado with John Wayne and
yeah,
all that.
Yeah. It's wild. I mean, at some point, he must have loved show business.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you find something you're good at, and they tell you you're going to give you money to do it.
Yeah, why not?
And you like it a little bit.
Yeah.
You keep doing it.
Yeah. Know? And none of the siblings, none of the other people went into show business?
No, they're all creative dudes. The boys are all creative. My sister, not so much. I mean, she might be creative, but she didn't really go into that at all. But yeah, they're all creative kids one way or the other. Yeah.
And are they working in the industry?
A little bit.
The
second brother, he's part of a theater group and he works in the theater. And, you know, I mean, as you know, you don't just get to go raise your hand and go, oh, okay, here's a job. You know,
no, I know. Yeah, of course. But, yeah. I mean, but I just was wondering what their aspirations are. There's no butchers or dentists.
There's no butchers or dentists. definitely not dentists. You know?
Yeah. That's not going to happen.
No. I remember my little brother, I went over to the house when he was like 12 years old or something, and he was doing homework, and
yeah.
my dad ended up just taking the homework and doing it, and his wife started screaming at him, you got to let him do his own homework. And he goes, he's not going to be a rocket scientist, okay? Don't worry. Like, he knows what these kids' fate is.
He's decided
yeah.
already?
Yeah.
So, but you didn't start out when you were growing up. You weren't always into acting, though, right?
No. I mean, at first, I was into anything but having to go to school, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't like school.
Wait,
which is another thing. I don't think school is for everybody.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Right? I mean, it shouldn't.
Where were you going, though? Like, what was it? Were you in Hollywood? Hollywood High or what?
I went to Beverly Hills High School.
Yeah.
Yeah. I made it to, you know, to the end of 10th grade.
That was it?
Yeah. That's it.
But what happened?
I got a record deal, and then I went on tour for the beginning of my 11th grade year. I was on tour for about 9 weeks, and at the time, I don't know if you remember Cypress Hill and House of Pain. I was on tour with those guys, and I got off that tour, and then they said, are you going to go back to high school now? And I said, I don't think so.
You were performing?
Yes, I was.
You were a rap guy?
I was a rap guy, man.
Yeah. And you were a successful rap guy? I mean, I kind of knew it, but I didn't go get the record or anything.
You can't get the record. It doesn't exist, I don't think.
Really?
Yeah.
So you were like the white rap guy?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Did you have a partner?
I did. His name is Alan Mamon. He goes by The Alchemist. He's probably one of the most respected hip-hop producers in hip-hop today.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
so he's still
stuck with it, yeah.
So, okay.
But again, I was just sort of looking for a way to be different and creative and be not have to do what everybody else was doing. You know, rap music in the early 90s was not what it is today. It was
right.
sort of like the punk music of my generation.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't mainstream. It was anti-establishment.
Right, sure.
Being a b-boy and being about graffiti and being about breakdancing and emceeing and DJing and that kind of thing was, now you got 7-year-old girls who live in fancy neighborhoods, hip hop is their thing, and
sure.
your mothers are pumping hip hop. It wasn't the scene then. Yeah, no.
What's going on at home when you just want to drop out of high school? And the old man's like, "All right."
Well, I wasn't really close to the old man then.
Oh, really?
I was kind of. He got remarried, and he was doing that life, and I was with my mom at the time, and.
Were you pissed off?
No, no.
It just wasn't part of your life.
No, yeah. I mean, I just. You know,
yeah.
I mean, he's always part of my life.
Yeah,
I was never like
a fuck you, dad. Yeah.
No. You don't say fuck you to my dad. No,
it doesn't.
Not
happen.
Today. I know.
So the rebellion was out.
Yeah. Well, it didn't have to be. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're always friends more than I just respected him, and we had a good friendship.
Well, what about your mom when you said you want to drop out of high school and go do hip hop?
She was, yeah.
She knew.
No, not at all, man. No, she was.
Good.
Yeah, she. My mom. She's passed a few years ago, or six, seven years ago now. But she was, a pretty interesting lady who was not normal by any means. I mean, I was, you know, 12 years old, I got kicked out of school, and she walked into the principal's office and told him to go fuck himself. You know what I mean? She was a different kind of lady.
She was an actress too?
She was actually a pretty good actress. Yeah, she was an actor and a model, and she was a hairstylist as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And just a free spirit kind of person?
Yeah, she was a bad bitch. Like, she was a badass, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
she,
yeah.
She didn't really take a ton of shit. She was pretty cold, like,
yeah.
And you know, I said, I'm, you know, I think I'm good at this thing. And she was like, well, do it. Don't do that other thing you're not good at, you know.
Fuck it.
Yeah, fuck it.
So, all right, how does the rap career stop?
So we got signed to this label in Europe.
Yeah.
And so we went to go do this show in London. I think it was called Top of the Pops or some goofy shit. I don't know what it was called, but we went there. I was 16 years old. We went there, and when we got there, they had done a remix to our song, and our album was about to come out in the States. And when we got there, they said, this is the remix, and this is what you're going to perform on the show.
Right.
And it was some goofy house mix of our song, which we hated.
It wasn't even your mix?
They, like, you know, house music at the time was big in London, and this is what they wanted. This is how they wanted to pump our record in
weird.
London.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we, the night before the, we were getting per diem every day, so we decided we got to keep getting the per diem. while we're here.
Yeah.
So we collected all the per diem.
Yeah.
And then on the morning we were supposed to, you know, leave and do the rehearsals and do the show, we took a flight to Amsterdam.
Right.
Never told anybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, the label dropped us, and then they called our label in back in the States, which was Tommy Boy Records at the time. And I think that that pissed them off too. So then they end up dropping us and not releasing the record. That's my story. I mean, maybe it's because they found out that the record, they didn't like it as much, but it's a much better story that they dropped us because we did something, you know.
You ran off with the per diem, bailed on the TV show.
Which we did do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Amsterdam was fun, right?
It was very fun. At 17 years old, Amsterdam, staying in youth hostels for 2 weeks was...
And you just bailed on the TV show?
Bailed, didn't even say anything.
Do you have the record, don't you?
I have most of the songs that we did, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's kind of disappointing. You had to put your fucking record out.
Yeah. But I then, you know, look, I found something else that I like to do creatively.
What, the acting?
Yeah, the acting.
When did you first start doing that?
We were actually doing a show at the Santa Monica Civic Center, and there was a director.
What was your rap name?
Skills.
Okay. Just Skills?
Yeah.
Skills and the Alchemist?
No, he was actually called Mudfoot at the time.
Skills and Mudfoot?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, I can't tell if you're looking at me like you're kind of making fun of
me. No, what do you mean? I'm just, well, I mean, as much as you are.
I'm making fun of myself?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. you know, your ego when you're 16 is amazing, you know what I mean?
So. No, I know. I mean, I'm not making fun of you, but it's
you can make fun of me.
No, it's nice. I mean, I think it's a little, you can get a little laugh at it.
Yeah, why not? I hope everybody's laughing their ass off, I don't, you know?
Shit. So you're doing a show in Santa
Monica? Anyway, long story. I mean, do you edit this, or do we just talk? And
just
then
talk. Don't be self-conscious.
No, I'm not. Funny. I mean, older I get, the more self-conscious I get. It's
really?
Weird.
Is that happening?
I think so. I think I get more... you know, when you're younger, you want to be kind of...
Swagger.
Yeah, but then you realize that that's all bullshit, and then you get... and especially today, you say the wrong... You put your foot in your mouth today. Everybody knows about it. Everybody hates you.
You haven't done anything hateable.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
And...
you'll stop me if I do? No, you'll probably let me.
No. But I can appreciate that. It is kind of weird where, you know, when you have the sort of life lessons, especially if you've been an asshole or... You've been arrogant, or you've left some wreckage. You know, you get to a point in your life where you're like, what was I doing?
Yeah, that, and also today, like I said, you say the wrong thing, and everybody's mad.
Well, I think sometimes
and everybody knows about it.
I think more if you do the wrong thing, that's worse.
That too.
You know, saying the wrong thing, it's not like you're going to drop the N word or something right now.
No.
Yeah.
No,
so. But I.
But
know
you don't know what's. I don't know what's appropriate or what's not appropriate anymore.
No,
not really. Not really. Anybody ever tell you remind me of Giovanni Ribisi? Have you ever gotten that?
No.
No.
But I don't know him. I've interviewed him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good guy.
Yeah, he is a good guy.
Yeah.
Intense guy. Good actor.
Very, very good actor.
You known him a long time?
I did. I've done a couple movies with him.
Which ones?
I did Boiler Room with him.
Oh, yeah.
I did Gone in 60 Seconds with him.
Oh.
And I directed a movie that he was in called The Dog Problem.
The Dog Problem. I saw that credit. Like, that was... How many have you directed?
Two and a half.
Two and a half movies you've directed? You're in the middle of one now?
No. I wrote a movie called Mercy that my good friend Patrick... directed, but we sort of wrote and directed it together. I mean, he's the director, I'm the writer, but we worked on it too. He directed. I shouldn't say that.
Let's come around to that. So you're in Santa Monica.
Skips is Santa Monica.
You're doing the gig.
Long story short, this director who was making this movie called A Boy Called Hate. It was about this young hoodlum who steals a motorcycle and kills people, and he came to my show and got in touch with me somehow and said, would you come audition for this? And I said, no. And then when I read it, I thought, well, this is cool. I'd like to ride a motorcycle and shoot people. And then...
did you ride at the time?
Did I ride motorcycles? Yeah. I've been riding motorcycles my whole life. I don't anymore. I have a 5-year-old daughter. And my gal said, when she got pregnant, we never ride a motorcycle ever again. And I said, fine. So I haven't ridden a motorcycle in 5 years.
Because she didn't want you to die on the motorcycle.
I think that's where she was going. Yeah. And it's good because
honored that. That's nice.
Yeah. I honored it. I still have a bike, but it just sits there.
And it's not calling you?
Mm. It does sometimes, but it's not worth it. I've been hit a couple times. And...
Yeah, it's fucking scary. My buddy Dean, like, he got a car just ran him off the road and he went down on the highway and fucking like... Got skinned up pretty good, but he
that's lucky. I mean, skinned up pretty good as you made it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And he didn't ride for a while, but he couldn't stay away.
Right.
I don't think he's got a bike now, but he was a lifelong bike guy. Yeah.
I think I just liked looking cool anyway, so I'm fine with it being gone. You know.
I never rode him because my dad was an orthopedic surgeon, and like he dragged me to the hospital when I was in high school and showed me a guy
traction.
That I got the sort of a scared straight shit.
Right. But I could have used your dad. I've had a lot of orthopedic surgeons in my life.
He would have taken you to the hospital.
What did he do? Knees, elbows?
Sure, he was a knee guy. Back, he did knees, backs, hips. I mean, he was full on. His partner did hands, but you know, he could set most bones.
Okay,
did some sports medicine as well.
All right.
Yeah, real deal.
Right. I've had a bunch of surgeries.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
From what?
From all different stupid stuff. Yeah. ACLs, torn biceps, broken collarbones.
From like falling off shit?
I did.
Wrecking cars?
No, I've done a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu for 20 years.
Do you fight?
On the street?
Yeah.
I'd like not to.
Yeah. But have you?
When I was a kid, all the time, yeah.
Oh, really? You got into fights all the time?
Yeah, yeah. But not as an adult, I think I've been in 2 fights, and that's in 20 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not my impulse to fight. I'm more of a negotiator.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
You're smart.
I guess.
Yeah.
But some guys just don't even think twice.
Well, I mean, you know, when you're younger, it's like proven stuff. But no, I hope I know. I don't want to get in a fight.
I feel like I should have been in one fight.
Well, when we're done with this, we'll go down.
Yeah, but I think that I don't have a chance there.
Everybody's got a chance.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that what you learn?
Yeah, absolutely. You hit somebody square in the jaw and they go to sleep. That's it. Yeah.
So you could get one through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you provoking me right now?
Absolutely not. I don't want to fight you at all.
So you do this movie, A Boy Called Hate?
Yeah, so anyway, I sort of realized that this is a good world for me. I didn't know if I wanted to write, direct, move the lights, bring the food, but wherever these group of weirdos was,
really?
I was into this trip.
And that was the first time you'd been on a set like that?
I mean, I guess, you know, my dad didn't work a ton when I was growing up. He took a lot of time off for whatever reason, but I didn't really view it when I was a kid as something to do. It was just like, okay, this is my old man's job. But when I was there, a part of it, I thought like, okay, this is my group of people.
Oh yeah, just because, well, there's so many different kinds of people in one place doing different shit.
But it's all, it's all this like, you know, this creative energy going towards this one thing. And I mean, it sounds pretentious, but.
No, it's true, it's not pretentious. Yeah. I mean, it's a business, and you know, when you get on
If you say something's pretentious, then it takes away that it's pretentious, right?
Well, no, I think that like, it's weird when there's a thing that we do when you're involved in show business where, you know, you sort of, especially if you've got more of a kind of a street smart, rugged sensibility, where you kind of trivialize it. But it's like, it's a fucking real business and people work hard and there's all kinds of, you know, people involved in one thing.
Yeah.
Working towards this one thing. It's kind of amazing. You get on a set and you're like, there's like 100 people there. I don't know what they're fucking doing, but they're doing real jobs.
Right.
You know, like down to the fucking person that's figuring out how to hide your mic.
Yeah.
So when you get that bug, do you take acting class?
I did. I went to this this place called Playhouse West. There's a theater company, and Jeff Goldblum and Robert Carnegie.
That's their place?
Yeah, but it was a really cool place because it was part of it was an acting school, but then the other part becomes this theater company. So after a couple of years, after you learn how to, you know, act, whatever the hell that means, then, you know, you get a craft of acting down. Then there's the next level of it, which is like you become part of the theater group and now you're putting up plays all the time and people are working on plays, writing plays, acting, directing in plays. So you have access to these 3 theaters.
Right.
And, you know, on and off for the last 20 years, I've been going back there, putting up plays. So it's this great little thing to be a part of. And, anyway, that's what I did. And
Goldblum is like one of the guys who created the
place? He started, or he's him and Robert Carnegie.
Robert Carnegie, I don't know that guy.
He was like a Sandy Meisner protege.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and
do they both teach at the place?
I don't. Yeah, Robert still teaches there, but I don't believe Jeff does anymore.
Did he used to?
Mm-hmm. A lot. Yeah.
And did you take with Jeff?
No, with Robert.
Uh-huh.
But I worked with Jeff a bunch.
Yeah.
You know, over the years.
He's an interesting actor.
He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he seems to be the real deal. What makes him your favorite? Like, what is it about the way he does it?
Just the way that
he's very quirky, right?
Yeah, but he's I've never met anybody who's more. I mean, in life and when he acts, who's more attuned with what's going on with the other person? He couldn't be more in the moment, you know.
Yeah.
And there's something like really interesting and human about that. It's like he's interested in everything, and he's interested, and that's, to me, the best actors are the ones who pay the closest attention. So that's why.
That's true. He's almost compulsive about it.
He's studying you. I always, that's, you know, that's, to me, acting is, you can plan all the stuff you're going to do, or you can just pay attention to what the other guy's doing or the other people are doing. And that's what makes people more interesting, if they're interesting to begin with. And he's very interesting. So.
Yeah. And he's like, you know, he's been around forever too, like doing little parts and little things.
He's very good, man. He's
a sweet guy too.
Yeah. He's an acting lesson just in himself.
Yeah, because like when you're talking to him, he's like, oh, really?
Yeah.
And he's almost like trying to get into your body.
Right. He wants to work off of it.
You know? Yeah. So. And the other guy was mostly Meisner-ish stuff?
Well, like, yeah, he studied with Sandy Meisner, and so, yeah.
Repetitions things?
Yeah.
And did you find that helpful?
I mean, I did.
What was it? Scene studies, and you'd get cast in productions at the place and that kind of stuff?
The productions ended up pretty much being what the students did. The students would write, and then you'd also, you know, back in the day, I can't believe I just said that, but at that time, you'd go get rights to...
You're going
to
say it more as time goes on.
Am I? All right. You'd get rights to do... You'd call Sam French and get the rights to do play that dramatists produce or that Sam French produced. So it was that combination of, you know, people writing. You know, directors would come to the school, and they would end up directing plays, and writers would study act. I mean, I think every good director or writer should study acting
situation.
A little bit.
Yeah. Because I think the first time I saw you and, like, noticed you, I think, was in that... it was the one with Jennifer Aniston, where you play the trainer.
Yeah.
But it was great, though. Like, I remember, because I didn't know who you were, and I'm like, who's that guy?
Right.
And then when I found out you were, I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Right. What makes sense?
Well, nothing, because, like, if I look at you... You kind of remind me of your old man, right? Is that all right to say? I mean, I'm not...
He's a handsome guy. Yeah, for sure.
But so there was that moment where I'm like, oh, that's that guy's... It made sense to me, that's all. But I thought... He was a douchebag, but I thought it was a... you know, he had a full life inside of him, that guy.
Thank you. I'll take it.
And then, like, when I start to notice you in the... all the Ocean's movies.
You don't have to notice me. I mean, you know.
No, but I think, like... why would I talk to you if I wasn't interested?
Good point.
But the stuff that you and Casey do in the Ocean's movie is very funny to me.
Thank you.
It's a funny dynamic. It's like a comedy team.
Thanks.
I mean, you guys have a thing that kind of built over the three movies where you kind of got a shtick together.
Yeah. All you got to do with Casey is just pay attention to him. And he's so interesting. And
really?
Yeah, I think so. So I just sort of showed up and just paid attention to Casey. And I felt like...
And reacted to
him? Yeah, basically. That's it. No homework. Pay attention to Casey, yeah.
So as this goes on, like, you know, how do you, you know, can, do you find that you're challenging yourself as an actor?
No, I mean, absolutely not. I mean, I've been, you know.
You've made a lot of movies.
Yeah, but it's been a minute, and I've been on a you know, procedural show for 10 years, which
That's a long time, dude.
Yeah, and listen, I'm no complaints, man. I mean, I'm lucky to have
How long are you in Hawaii every year?
About 6 days of every month.
Was that how it goes?
Yeah, I just go and I'll do a couple episodes, and then I don't do all of the episodes anymore.
Okay.
And then I, you know, come home.
So they shoot a lot of it in just exteriors in Hawaii?
No, all of it's in Hawaii.
Oh, it is.
Like I said, though, I'm just not in all of them. And
yeah, you were in all of them, no?
In the beginning, yeah.
For how many years?
2 or 3 years.
Yeah. So that's great. So you're making money in your sleep now.
Yeah, it's good. But to answer your question, am I doing things that I'm really, you know, excited about? Or what did you ask? What was the exact
challenging yourself?
Challenge? No, for sure, no.
Well, do you want to?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's...
Because I know, like, I got the...
It's a weird thing, man. I mean, you're in the... Like, how often... You know,
I'm at the beginning, though, in a way.
Yeah, but you seem like you're always in good stuff, and you seem like you're in stuff that you should be excited about.
Well, it's different for me. Like, you know, I didn't, like, now, like, my opportunity started to happen when I was in my 40s. So I have a sort of a type, you know, and I've done a few movies, you know, not many. And I can say no.
But I don't see you, I haven't seen you do a ton of stuff, and again, this is a weird thing to say, but I don't see you doing stuff for the paycheck.
No, I never set out to do that with acting.
Right.
It was never an
option. But do you do anything just for a paycheck?
No, I not if it doesn't, like, I'll tell you, like.
That's a pretty amazing.
The closest I get to that, really, is like, like I'm going to go out. I have a comedy special dropping in March, and I've got this hour that took me a couple of years to put together. And you know, once the comedy special's on, it's sort of dead in the water.
Right.
So like, I just added like 6 or 7 dates to go make a little money because I can. And then, you know, but it's me doing comedy.
But it's something that you dug deep for and busted your ass for.
It's all my
for.
Shit. Yeah.
That's what I mean. So anyway, that's a
right. I never had to do acting because I needed money.
Yeah.
Which is a different game.
It is. It is.
Because you got to make compromises.
Yeah.
Now, did you find that you were being typecast?
You mean as a result of why I ended up doing...
Well, no, just I mean like, you know, do you play the same guy a lot?
I think I don't know. I don't know. Maybe when I was younger a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But Dano's not like a, you know, he's not like a thuggy kind of jockey dude.
No, no, yeah. I guess not. But yeah. I guess I... Am I a jockey dude?
I don't know, are you?
I don't know. You tell me. I'll take it. You typecast me. I don't know.
I just met you. Yeah. And I know you do the Brazilian whatever.
Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
so you like it, man. You should try it.
I know I should try something.
You're not into any kind of...
I run up the hill.
That's great, man.
No, I do exercise and I work out and stuff. But the competitive thing, you know, I don't want to, you know, be crying on a mat.
Oh, nobody's going to make you cry. But I think, you know, you got to get out there
and... I know I'm competitive, but I don't like losing.
Yeah, I don't like losing either.
But you know how to deal with it because you know you've probably played a lot of shit.
Yeah, I guess everything losing's.
I take it personally, you know.
I get it. But you got to do it.
I mean, I know.
You got to do all that stuff.
So what are you thinking? That's what I got to do.
I don't know what you got
to
do.
I'm 56. What do you do at 56 to get in the game?
What get you want
to? I don't know. I can't start playing basketball. I don't know how to play basketball.
I don't know. I'm just saying stuff that's difficult and hard. It's we got to do,
you
got to
push yourself.
Everything, if you just sit around and.
No. I push myself up the hill. I'm going to start running up there.
It's good
and
enough.
And I run down. It's a big hill. It's 45. I don't,
everyone's different, man. If I didn't have exercise and jujitsu, I'd probably have to take antidepressants.
No, okay. I'm the same way now. You know what I mean? If I go 45 minutes up, it's straight up, and then I run down, it's like an hour and a half. And I hadn't done it in a couple of weeks. I did it today, and it was great.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can't have a panic attack while exercising.
So no.
That should tell you something.
Just a heart attack.
That's true. That you mistake for a panic attack.
Yeah. This is just a panic attack.
Yeah,
and then
I'm fine,
drop.
And then you die.
Yeah, that's fine.
But that's better.
Yeah, if I drop on the hill, that's good.
Yeah.
If it happens quickly.
Yeah.
So, but I got the big book of photographs, and it's a beautiful book.
Thank you, man.
So you're doing that kind of stuff. But also, you mentioned like writing and directing. Now, when you do, like... So you write plays?
I do. I've written a lot of plays.
Like full length kind of?
Yeah.
Wow, man.
I was going to bring you some, but then I thought that would be silly.
No, I mean, if I would have had time to read them.
It would have just been me giving
me French, Samuel French books?
Yeah, and saying, here, let's talk about this.
So when did you start writing the plays?
Right about, I don't know, 97, 98, because we were having trouble getting the rights to do the plays that we wanted to do.
At the
Playhouse, yeah. So I would go home and write scenes, and then I would bring the scenes in for different actors, and then we'd work on them. And then Robert Carnegie was there, and he would say, keep doing this, don't stop doing this. And then scenes turned into one acts, turned into full-length plays, and then I just that's where it started. And then I just really got into writing plays.
And what now, do they get produced?
Yeah. I've had a lot of produced plays. That's how they get published. You got to get them produced and then reviewed and then.
So what was the first big play? Have you had a big openings like in New York and stuff? I'm sorry, I don't know.
You don't have to know this.
I wish I'd know.
Don't worry. This is why I could have brought them for you.
I could get them. Yeah, I mean, I could have read them earlier.
But you know what? You know, when you're younger, you ever notice you talk to young people and they want to tell you about all the stuff that they're doing. The older I get, the less I want to.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about anything.
Push what I'm doing.
Yeah,
you know,
I can't stand it. I don't even want to be on social networking platforms anymore.
I'm not.
How's that feel?
I mean, I don't know the difference, so it feels fine.
Never wear on there.
No. I mean, I'll like creep out on Instagram to like look at stuff that I'm into sometimes, but under a fake account. I don't have, you know, I'm not like posting pictures of my child and my, you know,
I think
new
it's better.
Shoes or whatever.
I'll do my shoes. I've done my shoes.
That's all right.
And the cats I've done.
But listen, man, I'm not knocking it. It's just,
no, I know, but it's like draining. It's like a whole other job.
It's work. Man, every day I go, wait, the day's over? You wanted me to also post things?
And worry about how people respond to
That's another thing, man. I don't want to do the wrong thing. I don't want people... as much as I don't give a shit what people think, I don't want it to be hated either. You know what I mean?
You're nervous about that.
Yeah. So or someone makes a comment and then I'm like getting into a beef with somebody over the thing.
Oh,
and,
that'll happen.
Yeah. I can't.
You avoided it. Good for you. Probably mental hygiene is probably better.
And maybe I'm just at the, you know, I guess if you're a young creative today, you have to be a part of that.
That's what they tell you.
Right.
I mean, it's a very competitive game. You know what I mean? The branding machine.
Yeah.
Maybe it's true. I don't know, but I see a lot of people. It's just like, you know, these people are going 4, 5, 10 times a day. And, you know, what else are they doing? I look at it. I'm like, what's the matter with you?
Yeah.
But then what am I looking at it for?
Yeah, right. Well, because it's interesting to look at sometimes. I don't know.
So the plays, because I'm curious about plays, actually, because theater, because I've become friends with Tracy Letts, who's a great playwright.
Yeah.
And the whole process of writing plays, especially when they're a little abstract, is sort of interesting to me. So how did you learn to do it? Just by reading them and just like...
by, you know, at the, like I said, at the Playhouse, we worked on, you know, we at the school, you weren't really supposed to grab stuff from movies. We were always, you know, going after good plays.
Right.
Because it's, you know, working on the stage and that's...
Who were your favorites?
Shanley. David Rabe.
Oh, yeah. Rabe's good, though, yeah.
Rabe's great. Shanley, what about Shanley?
I don't know Shanley.
He's one of my favorite writers ever.
What was his big plays?
Italian-American Reconciliation, Danny and the Deep Blue Sea, The Dreamer Examines His Pillow.
Yeah, someone was just mentioning this guy to me today or yesterday.
Women of Manhattan.
Is he still around?
He wrote Doubt. He wrote Joe Versus the Volcano.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote Moonstruck.
I feel like stupid about it.
Why? Why?
Because like I know that I enjoy theater if it's good theater and I don't go to it enough.
Yeah.
And I don't seek it out.
Right.
But when I do, I find it very moving and unlike anything else.
Yeah.
And I'm always sort of fascinated with it because I don't know how they evolve. Plays can be very unusual to me.
Sure, but as an actor, I think that's the experience as an actor. That's the one you kind of are going for.
The play?
Yeah, because you get to kind of live it from the beginning to the end, and that's the thing. And
Some of it gets weird.
It can get weird, yeah.
And do you write weird plays?
I don't know if they're weird.
Yeah?
No, mostly like, about relationships, you know.
Like, what's the setting of the... What's your first big play?
The first play I ever wrote that got published was called Two Wrongs.
Yeah.
And it's about a man and a woman that both see the same therapist, and then the therapist... tries to set them up, which is something a therapist shouldn't do.
Right.
They actually fall in love, and then the therapist actually falls in love with the woman as well.
Yeah.
And so then the therapist breaks them up, and then it explodes in his face. Yeah, because he falls in love with her, so then he tries to pull them apart. And it's just, the idea was to be, I'm into therapists and therapy. I think that therapists are interesting people, and I always wondered, like, do they have lives too? You know, do therapists have feelings, or, you know what I mean?
Of course they do.
Of course they do, right. But as a
someone
who goes to therapy, you just imagine that they're perfect, right? Because they have all the answers. They're smarter than everybody. They know what's going on.
Did you go?
Yeah, I'm a fan of therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, did you have a therapist that sort of inspired that? Where you're sort of like, what the fuck is that?
I mean, there's a reference to a therapist in almost everything I've ever written.
Yeah?
You know? So, yeah.
So, were they helpful to you?
Even the ones that aren't are helpful, you know? I mean, everybody's either a hero or a cautionary tale, right?
I guess, or maybe just a bore and, you know, waste of time.
That's a cautionary tale.
I guess so.
Isn't it? I mean, your family, your friend, everybody, you either, you either look at them and go, ooh, I want to do that, or I never want to do that.
Yeah, or status quo. Is that a cautionary tale, kind of?
I mean, sure. Like, yeah, I don't want to be boring.
Yeah,
I don't want to be not interesting. You know?
Yeah, because I've been a therapist. I just started going recently again, and it's... It's okay, you know, I used to do a joke about it, that like when you go back to therapy and if you're in your like 50s or your late 40s and you don't waste any time, you can kind of, you walk in and you're like, all right, look, there's a lot of things we can't unfuck.
Right.
And I know that.
So. But listen, knowing what's fucked is really helpful, I think.
No, for sure. No doubt. Like, and also, like, there's all these different avenues now with the therapy in terms of like, what is PTSD and what isn't.
Right.
Like from it, because if you...
Everything, really, right?
Right. So if you expand the definition of that, you know, what, how much of your problems or whatever your shortcomings are, whatever your emotional obstacles are based on, you know, maybe emotional trauma that you never even recognized as such.
It has to be, right?
Yeah. It's just a reframing of the same shit all
right,
the time.
Right.
You know, mommy, daddy, whatever.
But you do it over and over and over and over again, yeah. And then you go, all right, I understand this a little bit, and that's it, right? Or you take pills and you just...
I was always adverse to pills.
Me too.
Yeah. I tried them.
Yeah. I mean, you mean drugs or like antidepressants?
No, I mean like antidepressants.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't want to down talk it because some people need it. But
of course.
You know, look, chemical imbalance or whatever else. The truth of the matter is we're all that stuff has to come from.
And right.
Yeah, I guess some people are just born goofy, you know.
Right.
But for the most part, I'd say 95% of it is how we were raised, our childhood, or what screwed us up when we were younger, you know?
It's weird, though, because, like, you know, as you say, like, you had a kid, and, you know, you say that there's a part of you, you get older, and, you know, you don't want to be as cocky or whatever, you know what I mean? That, you know, sometimes age just kind of mellows you, like, you know, some things aren't as important as they used to be.
Sure.
Which is a fucking gift.
Right.
You know, but then you come up against, for me as an older guy, like I'm not married, and I've been married twice. I got no kids, mm-hmm. and there's like a reason for that.
Right.
I don't want kids.
Great.
But I don't know why. You know what I mean? Did you want a kid?
Yeah, I feel like I always wanted a kid.
So the kid was on purpose.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no, I wanted a kid. I don't know why I wanted a kid. I mean, I think it's just in my DNA to want a kid.
I think it's supposed to be in all of our DNA to
sure.
want a kid on a primitive level.
Sure, sure. But then, listen, people that decide, look, if you can be happy and you don't need that.
Yeah.
Then
yeah, the happiness thing. Yeah, that's a whole other thing too. You know, the happiness.
Happy. It's a relative term. I mean,
I guess so.
But I mean, if you can get through life and realize I'm glad I didn't do that.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, look. I mean, what are we here for, right?
I guess. Yeah. I'm not saying it's bad or good.
I'm not either. I'm not saying.
I'm just realizing as I get older that like you do start to realize like it's a finite. Trip we're on.
Yes.
You know, yeah. We're back to death.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, what is it? Because, like, you spend a lot of time repeating yourself or doing stupid shit or whatever it is that are your patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day you're sort of like, hey, I got to make some different choices.
Right, right. If we're not constantly trying to be better, constantly trying to fix the shit that we've done over and over and over again, we're not living, right?
Right. But also, like, learning to accept certain things as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's some things like, well, this is just the way it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I got, and instead of beat the shit out of myself.
Right,
you know,
right. Yeah. Sure, sure, sure. But you can fix. True.
Yeah, you can. You can.
Fix.
What if you had success in fixing?
That's a pretty big general.
But like in your mind.
Everything, man. I mean, being, you know, whatever my goofy past is with relationships or how I was with my mother or how I was with my father and. You know, I'm being with a woman for 10, 12 years and going, oh, this is the way to do it, or communicating, or getting through things,
right?
Using different tools that I didn't use before, or understanding things, or not having to be right, or...
Sure. Oh, that's a big one.
Right? I mean,
or being able to say, I don't know.
Or seeing the big picture of like, wait, if I could, you know, make it to the end and be, you know, content and... be with this person. I mean, look, when you're young, it's about fun, right?
I guess.
Well, it was for me. All I wanted to do was have fun. And as I get older, I'm like, okay, so you trade a little bit of fun for more meaning, right? As you get older, it's like, all right, let's try to make things...
Deeper
and more meaningful. Relationships friendships or whatever else.
Right.
You know?
Right.
When you're younger, your friend does something stupid and you're like, I just want to, you know, punch him in the mouth. And as you get older, you go, all right, how can I help my friend not be an idiot? And so I don't want to punch him in the mouth. And,
right.
But when you're younger, you just butt heads and go, all right.
Fuck you.
Fuck you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's
no,
a,
that
it's
makes
a,
sense.
It's a we could do a whole 3 hours on what, you know, what can be fixed and what did.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just curious to me, but in the sense that, like, what I do know for sure is a lot less is... There's a lot of the things I thought were very important or not.
I agree.
And that gives you a certain amount of leeway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A little freedom.
Mm.
Like, and it just falls away naturally.
Yeah.
Which is a fucking gift.
Right.
And now, like, yeah, the meaning thing. And also, like, I wasn't the guy that just, you know, wanted to have fun. Now I'm getting to that point.
But you know, I'm 56, and I'm at the juncture where I'm like, well, what do I want to do with my life? My whole life was fucking struggle to get where I am, and then like somehow or another, the miracle of success happened.
Right.
And now I'm sort of like, well, I don't know what I want to do with this.
Right.
You know, I just bought this house and I love it, but I was living in a shack.
Right.
So. Right. I don't know. What do you do now? Like, a lot of things worked out.
Don't stop. I mean, right? Yeah. Keep doing what you're doing.
So when you write plays, like the therapy play, do you find that you're resolving things? Like, do you find through the writing process that you're able to enact and resolve and see things differently? Is that part of the experience?
No. I mean, I think it maybe subconsciously, right? It's got to be. You know, I mean, you know.
What are the other subjects that you do?
It's usually about relationships. Yeah. It's usually about trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
I mean, we're a communal species, right? Sure. So we're supposed to be with other people. And
that's what I hear, yeah. I mean, I tend to like it once I get there, but yeah. Getting there is difficult.
Well, but so anything anything worth digging into is difficult, right? Yeah, I mean, right, if we just do the things that are easy, that's boring, and we're also going to end up being 80-something or 90-something and go, shit, what did I do? You know? Yeah. It's difficult to learn how to play the guitar. I mean, so you got guitars, right?
No, like, I do that, yeah.
Yeah, but that's not easy to do. You could go your whole life and go, I never dug deep into that and tried it. I mean, martial arts, it's like, sure. It's a hard thing. You get beat up and you get...
That's
broken
true.
A little
I guess
bit,
that's
but
true.
But you accomplished it. And anyway, going back to the question, I think on a subconscious level, when you're writing something or acting in something or taking a photograph or whatever it is, of course, there's a part of that that's therapeutic, right? But at the end of the day, if you're a creative person, I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up. You know what I mean?
You feel that too?
Yeah, I'm still searching for what's going to be the thing that I'm happy that when I'm dead, I know that exists. And to me, that's not, I certainly haven't done that yet.
It's not Hawaii Five-O?
It's definitely not Hawaii Five-O.
I'm sorry.
No, but you're right, man. It's not. And look, I'm lucky enough to do something that I like enough.
Yeah.
To get paid to do it.
Oh yeah, man.
But
It seems to me that like that is a nice thing to have that gig, you know, because it does afford you a certain amount of freedom to do other things and do things you want to do.
Yeah. Well, not. Yeah. I mean,
how did you start doing the photographs?
I was directing my first movie and
the dog movie.
No, this movie called Dallas 362, that Jeff Goldblum was actually in.
I got to watch that movie. How'd it do?
It's okay. I mean, it went to festivals, independent movie. It did all right. But the cinematographer, this guy, Phil Parmet, he was a great photographer, and he sort of took me through photography school while making that movie, and then I just got obsessed with it. But again, that was just something, me trying. I mean, I don't consider myself a photographer. I got really into taking pictures for 10 years. And
you still do it?
Not really.
Oh, that was it?
I mean, I did I don't know, man. Like I said,
I'm not trying to bum you out.
No, you're not bumming me out. I'm still, like I said, I'm still trying to figure out
what
I can be. You know, when you're younger, you do things because you want to get patted on the back a little bit.
Sure,
want people to go, oh, I really like that. And as you get older, you're like, I'm not so interested in that. I want to do something.
You tried it.
Yeah, and then you go through, I want to say something. I want people to understand this and go, all right, I dig this and I'm with you and thank you for that.
Yeah.
And then you go past that stage and you're like, all right, I just want to do something that I like to do. And I feel like I'm being creative. You know?
Well, don't you find though, like, look, man, like I'm starting to feel that way about acting. It's like something I always wanted to try. Like I always had it in me.
You're good at it.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
But like there's a lot of sitting around, dude.
Yeah, true.
And you know, it's
what's the saying? They don't pay you to act. They pay you, or they don't pay you to, they pay you to wait.
Yeah. But I mean, I like it and I wanted to challenge myself and I'm doing a role where I got to, you know, I'll be a little different than who I am coming up next week and I'm nervous about it, but whatever. But I don't like, I'm glad I'm getting these opportunities to try it, but like, I don't know if it's my life. And stand-up I've been doing my whole life. But oddly, what's happening to me now is like, is there a time where it's okay to be like, no, I think I'm done doing things.
Yeah, man. If you, as long as you got, I mean, like you said, you're not living in a shack anymore.
Well, the thing is, right, that's true. But like, I guess my point is, no matter what you do or what you think in your mind, I'm going to do something that's going to be the thing that I'm going to be proud to leave or whatever. All that stuff drifts. It all fades, man.
What do you mean?
I mean, it's like, what is the relative importance of fucking anything that anyone's accomplished? Eventually, after 5 years, 3 years, it's like, it's gone. It's behind you. It doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, but if you're a creative, I hate to use the word artist, but if you're an artist and you get to a point where you don't want to do it anymore, then you're probably ready to die.
I guess. You're like my cat. You know, you just like, I'm going to crawl under the bed.
Yeah, man. I mean, she's like, I don't do the things I used to do anymore. I'm not, you know, my dog doesn't run up the steps and catch ball anymore. She used to jump up and catch a frisbee. She can't jump up anymore. You think she's happy?
No.
No. I mean, 100, 300 years ago, if we were traveling and the dog couldn't make it across the river, we'd see a dog. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Someone hit it in the head with a rock. Like, it's a wrap on the dog.
Yeah. No, they have good lives now.
I think they did that with people, even.
Sure.
If grandma couldn't make it across the river.
Sorry.
Yeah. Grandma, it's been fun.
Yeah. Got to go. We got to keep moving.
Yeah. We can't miss this winter.
I think people still do that. They just put them in homes.
Right. Right. Well, I don't want to go to a home.
No.
Yeah. If
no
I homes. Hear someone say change the diaper, I'm going to look for a shot of heroin or something.
Something. Someone to do it. No, I get what you're saying.
But again, you know, I say, oh, I want to do something that I'm proud of and go, okay, I did that. I hope that when I do that thing, I immediately want to move on to the next thing.
Right.
Or otherwise, you know.
What's life?
Or it's, you know, you're old and you just want to hang out with your gal and kids if you have kids or get a new cat.
Or just sit and read.
Sit and read. Oof. Oof.
No good.
No, man.
How many plays have you written?
20.
Yeah. And how many have been published?
Well, I have 4 plays, full-length plays, published through Dramatist.
Mm-hmm.
No, 3.
Yeah.
And then I have a collection of plays. And in that collection, there's about 15 plays. And those were all the plays that were like back published after I had gotten published. And that's all the stuff that I did at Playhouse West that never had a bigger production than at Playhouse West.
And these are things that get done? You get residuals from them occasionally? Or?
$6 here and there.
Yeah. Have you seen productions of your plays done that you've just walked upon?
No.
Oh, no?
Never.
Huh.
No.
And do you want to do your plays?
I would love to do a play in New York, but I go over, you know, it's like I go in a meeting and they go, oh, that's cute, you write plays. You know, they don't take it seriously.
Why?
I don't know, but maybe because I'm on Hawaii 5-0 or I don't know. I don't know.
That's it, though?
I don't know. Maybe I haven't written anything good enough yet for that. I mean, it's a tough world to get into. I mean, I've never acted in a play. I've been on stage acting in L.A. for 20-something years. I've never... done anything in New York on Broadway, off Broadway, off
Have
Broadway.
You tried?
Yeah.
And
I mean, not vigorously.
Yeah. But that seems to be like, if you've written like 20 some odd plays, that seems to be like something, one of the things that has lasted the longest in terms of what you like to do.
Sure. But just being prolific doesn't mean that you're good at it, right?
No, of course not, but you like doing it.
Yeah.
So what about fatherhood? How's that going?
I dig it, man. I dig it. My daughter's an amazing, smart, sharp, beautiful human being, man.
How old?
She's 5.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, everybody thinks that about their kid, right?
Geniuses. Yeah, they're all geniuses. But, gifted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she, you know, man, there's few things in life that make all the bullshit go away, and she's one of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's great.
But that's real, like.
And you live with the mother.
I do.
Yeah, it's and I can't like. So I don't have one, but I know that it does something to you.
Yeah, man. It does a lot of things to you.
Yeah. How did it change you, really? Did you, were you nervous going into it? Were you concerned?
Yeah, I was concerned. You know, like I said, everything's either a hero's tale or a cautionary tale. So I don't, everything I do with my daughter, aside from just watching her and enjoying her, is I hope I don't fuck this up. I hope, you know, my friend once told me, I told her I was having a daughter. She has 2 kids. And she had a rough childhood, and I said, I'm just worried, you know, I'm having a daughter, and what do I know from raising a girl? I mean, I know I could raise a guy, slap him around and, you know,
do what your dad did.
Yeah, exactly. Or do what my dad did, the opposite of the bad that he did, you know?
Yeah.
And she said, you know, all you have to do for a girl if you don't want to be, if you don't want her to be a stripper is just love her. And I was like, great.
You could do that.
Perfect, I can do that.
Now, how many grandkids does your father have?
2, just my daughter, and then my sister has a son.
Does he like it?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah?
Yeah.
They turn into something else, the old men, sometimes when they have the grandkids.
He's the same.
No? Oh, really? With her, he's the same?
Yeah, he's the same.
Well, I think because sometimes they can,
but in a good way,
they can show up better. Because the kid leaves.
Well, that's the idea, right?
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah,
my girl the other day was talking about, you know, talking about her grandparents were so good with her.
Yeah.
Why can't their parents be as good? Because when you're a parent, you're figuring this shit out. By the time you're a grandparent, you go, yeah, I know just what to do.
Yeah.
And then when it gets a little goofy, I can go home or they can send the kid away.
Yeah, right. You perfect.
Know? And that's back to death, man. That's like the same thing with death. Like, you know, when yeah, we're young, we lose our great-grandparents and then we lose our grandparents and then you lose friends along the way. And then by the time you're parents go, you should be prepared and able to deal with death and able to
kinda
accept it and understand
it. I'm just dealing with this cat. Yeah. My parents are still around.
Yeah.
My grandparents are gone.
But what's the bummer, right? The missing it?
No, it's no bummer. It's just like, it's sort of like breaking up with somebody in the same, you don't want to do it. It's going to be a pain in the ass.
It's funny you say that because every girl that I couldn't break up with, I kind of had this sick feeling like, well, if they just die, I'd be okay. Right,
because you don't want to do it.
Well, no,
you don't
I also
break up.
I just
them.
Don't want them to. If they're gone, then I don't have to decide whether I could have worked it out or been better.
Yeah.
Ah. Well, I don't. I have no
it's a
choice.
Dark, but yeah, I get
sorry.
It.
Sorry.
Yeah. But it's just like these things where, like, I broke up with somebody not too long ago, right, and it's harrowing to sort of come to the moment where you're like, I'm doing this.
Right. And it's the worst thing ever.
It's heavy.
Yeah.
And not unlike, you know, I think, you know, putting a cat to sleep is a little more final, but that, you know, approaching it and saying like, all right, let's do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you're not a religious guy or anything?
No,
else.
You?
No, not at all.
Hmm. Were you brought up with any?
I mean, no. My dad was like a, you know, like
just
pretending to be religious Jew.
Right.
And my mother was a...
He probably was brought up with it and then got away from it.
I don't even know how much it was real for him.
Yeah.
But, and then my mom was born Catholic and then was a born again Christian.
Ooh.
So she was.
Did she stay? She was that when she, through the end?
Yes, very much so.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you, and how old were you when that happened?
When she started that?
Yeah.
15, 16.
Oh, so you saw it happen.
Yeah. Strange. Strange.
It must have been
strange. Yeah. Hey man, look, whatever floats your biscuit. You know,
I get it. I get it, but that's one of those transitions where you're like, man, what just happened?
If you're happy, if it makes you happy, you know. People that go after
But what did she bring you to church and stuff?
I mean, she would say, you know, before, my mom, she's an interesting lady. I used to get into trouble when I was younger.
Yeah.
You know,
like
when,
what? Arrested and shit?
Arrested, fights,
yeah,
wild, you know, late nights, yeah, whatever, going to Hollywood clubs when I'm 15, 16 years old. And, you know, she wasn't the kind of mother that would say, don't go. She would just say, let me pray for you and put hands on you and Jesus will keep you safe.
But before that, though, you were 14 and she wasn't doing that, right?
No. You mean praying?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I mean, it's a big shift from, like, you know, whatever she was before she was born again. And then, you know, how did it happen?
I mean, that's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, different, that's a long story.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, you ever, here, I'll just make it simple. Do you ever know any born-again Christians that didn't do a bunch of crazy shit before they became
born again? Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
So they're all kind of going, oof, maybe let me try to fix all that.
Yeah, they're
or look
lost
for something. Lost, a little bit lost. And if that fixes them and it does good for you, I mean, I guarantee you that when she passed, that's what made her okay with passing.
Yeah.
You know, when it was like, hey, you want to fight? And she was like, no, I'm good. I got Jesus. We can judge it, but we could also.
So she pushed it out there and she got too far out there and then she needed to get back.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is better than people that didn't come back, right?
Yes.
Do you talk about that kind of stuff on the show? What do you do?
On this show?
Yeah.
Sure.
Religion, something like that.
Well, yeah. Recently, I've gotten a lot of, like, I just talked to Paul Walter Hauser, the guy who's in the...
Yeah. I just see, I don't know, he looks familiar, and I see his face on this billboard everywhere.
He's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I talked to him. We got into some Jesus.
So he's into Jesus.
He grew up with Jesus. His father was a minister.
Oh, okay.
A Lutheran minister.
Yeah.
But he kept the Jesus.
He did.
Yeah, but it's sort of fast. Yeah. I mean, some people get away from it.
Again,
Jesus.
whatever you dig.
No, I get it. But, like, there's something kind of fascinating when somebody snaps into it. You know, it's pretty dramatic.
Being
saved is a dramatic thing.
Right.
Like, I talk about that on stage. I say, for me to find God at this point in my life, the wheels would really have to come off.
Me too. Me too, man.
I don't want that.
No.
It's
no.
Weird. That's the resistance.
Well, that's what does that tell you? I mean, the wheels.
Well, I'm just curious about when your mother changes into the born again,
And I mean, you're 15 and you're out of control.
Yeah. It was good for me because she was like, I have no worries. Like, I'm not worried about you going out, and I'm not worried about hoodlums that are coming by here, you know,
yeah,
doing hoodlum stuff, because we're all taken care of. So for me as a kid,
you're like, all right,
this is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing can hurt you.
But there was no discipline after that?
Oh, I haven't had discipline since I was 12.
Yeah. So it was just sort of like, well, Jesus forgive you, and did you
not even about forgive you? You're safe, you're protected.
Huh. But she didn't try.
I mean, I was you know, hanging out with animals, yeah, you know, dudes that had just gotten out of prison that escaped life sentences because they were underage, and you're fine.
Where'd you meet those guys?
I don't know, man. You know, I don't know.
That sounded like an exciting time.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, I always, you know, my dad was, again, like, he was a tough dude from Queens.
Yeah.
So for me, I was constantly trying to be as tough as him, you know, like, yeah, that's what I had to live up to. So
right,
the worst humans I could surround myself with, the more legitimate I was as a person when I was younger, you know what I mean?
And were you getting validation from him?
I don't even know if he was paying attention to that part of it, but I definitely was, you know.
You were trying to just...
yeah, man. He hung out. His friends were like Israeli drug dealers and mobsters and shit. I'm like, I know a guy who stabbed someone. I'm going to hang out with him, you know?
That was it.
Yeah.
And so what did it take for you to get out from under that?
I guess...
Was there like
I don't know, I'm still, I mean, look, I come on this thing, the first thing we talk about is that, you know? I know going into talking to anybody, they want to go, what's it like having that dude as your pop? So I'll be under it forever, right?
No. I mean, just what did it take for you to realize that you were going to be defined by different things?
Oh, that's you talk about, what have you fixed over the years?
Sure, was there a moment where you're like, I got to get this murderer out of my house?
Sure, listen, you know what? I still talk to the murderer. I mean, I have, you know, boundaries, and
you don't have to prove
the
yourself.
The older I get, I'm trying to impress less and less, you know what I mean?
Right, right. You got some self-acceptance.
Yeah, and I know what I want to. I don't want any trouble, man. I want to hang out with my wife and kid. Right.
I want to
exercise and you know, and hang out with my kid and do something good creatively.
Because I only know your father from movies,
right,
and from my whatever I'm projecting onto the guy.
Right, right.
You know, and like I was, but but, like, you know, I knew that he was, you know, relatively tough Jew, but I don't know all those things. And it's no different than any other fucking crazy father.
Right.
That a male child is trying to, you know, to sort of live up to.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's just a little more, you know, I can, when you tell me it, I'm like, oh, I can picture James Caan.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Just different. You can't picture me trying to live up to my crazy motherfucking father.
Because I don't know. Right.
Exactly. Know. Yeah. You know, I mean, I was going to try to be a doctor.
Well, good thing not.
Didn't
man.
Happen.
No.
Didn't happen. No. He's out of his mind in other ways, but he never hung out with Jewish, you know, mobsters. And
they weren't Jewish mobsters.
He hung out
there. Oh, no, them too. Them yeah. too.
Just a Jewish drug dealer.
Yeah.
Arms dealers
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah. I met you, you remember I met
in
you
New
at
York, yeah,
Mogador. Cafe Mogador.
Yeah.
And they have, I go there because they have Malawa.
Yeah.
You know Malawa?
Which is, what's that?
It's like a Yemenite dish that they only make on the weekends. And the only reason I know that is because a drug dealer friend of his, that his wife would make it every Saturday and Sunday. And we'd go over there and have Malawa.
I love that place. I go there all
Me
the time.
Me too. It's my favorite restaurant.
Yeah, I remember. And I recognize you. And we chatted and we were going to do this. And were you with your wife? I think you were with
your
wife.
I was with
wife.
My gal, yeah. You said, let me get you and your dad on.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. You're like an asshole.
So
like
that's not going to fucking happen. Yeah. My wife's like, I love him. I was like, he's a jerk off. No, I'm kidding. I didn't say it.
Oh, she listens to the show?
She does. She's a fan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, what? That would have been great to have you and your dad on. Just have him, like, you know, beat you down every other fucking
word. I just sit
word.
There and listen. I'm, yes, sir. What do you want me to say? You know what I mean?
You'd start and he'd yeah. interrupt you.
My dad, he just had a back surgery. He can't even get out of bed right now.
Yeah.
And if he gave me a dirty look, I'd crumble. You know what I mean?
Still.
Yeah.
Intense, man.
Yeah, man.
Now, do all the other the younger brothers have that same thing with him?
I don't know. I didn't really grow up with him.
Do you talk to him, don't you?
A little bit.
Not like that, though, I guess. You don't say, like, are you terrified?
No, I mean, he's terrifying, but I respect.
Yeah.
A lot of respect for
him. I get it. Yeah.
I couldn't tell you the half of reality because of...
Of what? The respect?
No, I mean, I just have... there's nothing... I couldn't say a bad word about the guy.
Yeah, of course.
And listen, like any father, of course there's bad shit to be said, but I don't have the balls, nor would I ever say anything in a disrespectful way.
Well, I'm just glad you got closure.
Yeah. Closure? Wait a minute.
No, still open-ended? Still working on it?
No, No, you're right.
Yeah.
I got closure.
You're okay. You're comfortable.
100%.
Acceptance.
100%.
Good talking to you.
Yeah, man.
That was Scott Kahn. I thought that was a nice finish. Hawaii 5-0 is currently in its 10th season. It's on Friday nights on CBS. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour. For all of my tour dates. Oh, yeah. People keep telling me this. I wouldn't know it, but my show, Marin, Four Seasons of Marin, are on American Netflix. I know that. North American Netflix. It's everywhere, but a lot of places the fourth season. But I know here in America, all four seasons are on Netflix, and it is being taken off Netflix, I think, on the 13th of this month. So if you haven't seen my show... And you want to watch it, do it now. All right? Just want to put that out into the world. Okay.
Boomer lives.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.